RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
I'm reading from the freespeechunion.nz website and their news page. Free Speech Union joins sister organizations in launching International Association of Free Speech Unions. They tell us that the Free Speech Union is pleased to be a founding member of the International Association of Free Speech Unions, IAFSU, launched, well, just over a week ago. The enemies of free speech hunt in packs. The champions of free speech need to band together, is a quote. And I think that quote is attributable to the chief executive of the Free Speech Union, Jonathan Ayling, who joins us now. Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for coming on.
Good to chat with you again, Paul.
Okay, they hunt in packs.
Yes, I think that is clear. What we see is a collectivist mindset that seeks to suppress dissent from within groups and in other groups that challenges their perspective. And so whether it be cancel culture, whether it be rife within our institutions, even in some forms of legislation that's going through, what I think we see is a real opposition to the idea that individuals are the agents within society. They are the means by which free thought and personal belief is held. And I think what we need to do is promote an idea that we work towards what are in that traditional sense of the word, Paul, are liberal values that promote freedom for all.
Yeah. Well, are they liberal? They're common sense values if you value the individual.
Yeah, I that's a really disputed phrase in terms of the way that term liberal is used. The British use of it and the American use of it. By that, I don't mean progressive. I mean liberal. It comes from that Latin base of it, freedom. And this is the essence of the Enlightenment, those Enlightenment values that came to the fore and really were what, in conjunction and out of the Renaissance, led to the West being the most peaceful, prosperous state, stable part of the world humanity has ever known. And I think you and I both know the West generally, and particularly the English-speaking West, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, we did not become the countries that we are of relative prosperity and stability and peace by chance. And I think some of our opponents would suggest that it's just random that these countries have stumbled upon these systems of representative government and inclusion of minorities and tolerance. No, there are some basic principles that have made us capable of navigating forward in this way. And they are In that classical liberal sense, these liberal values that believe that we are each called to take responsibility for our actions and we each have freedom as we do that.
Maybe our societies, the ones that you've just identified, the Anglo-speaking Western societies, have been too tolerant, because our tolerance, let's say, has allowed this problem to develop, I would say, beyond a certain point, beyond being comfortable.
I would, Paul, I certainly hear where you're coming from there, and you probably know, and your listeners will know, the idea of the paradox of tolerance that Karl Popper posited while he was lecturing down in Christchurch. Karl Popper was one of the great philosophical minds, and a lot of people of the 20th century, a lot of people don't know that he spent a lot of time in New Zealand. The thing with the paradox of tolerance is that it is a legitimate concern to hold, but I wouldn't say that we've become too tolerant. I think we have perverted what tolerance is. Because nowadays, if we ask most people, what does it mean to be tolerant? It means, well, we all agree with each other. Nonsense. That is the opposite of what tolerance means. That's conformity. Tolerance, embedded intrinsically within the definition of tolerance, is that you disagree. But despite the fact that you disagree, you still tolerate each other. You still don't use violence against each other. You allow each other to live in society and go about their business and run shops and have families and whatever, go to schools, whatever that may be. You tolerate them even though you fundamentally disagree. And so what I would suggest, it's not that we have been too tolerant. It's that we have allowed would-be censors come in and say, it's not only enough that you allow them to go about their lives, you have to agree with them. And so a lot of people, because they wanted to be tolerant, because they wanted to be accepting of diversity, they wanted to be nice, polite people, they kind of go along with it. And then after a while, they go, hang on a second, this is your word, I don't feel comfortable now. I don't agree with these values. I don't agree with what's being put forward now. And it seems that tolerance has morphed into something quite different. Now, look, I only talk about free speech in public. I am a free speech advocate, and I don't want to give others points to agree or disagree with me on this. This is a means to an end, and this is the drum that I bang. But I have strong opinions on lots of other issues. Some people know about them, others don't. Some people will agree with me, others won't. That's not the point. The point is that we're allowed to have opinions. We're allowed to have beliefs. We're allowed to operate out of our conscience. And as long as, you know, once it translates into action, that's a different thing. Societies and government regulate all sorts of actions. Of course they do. There's all sorts of actions we're not allowed to take. But more and more, there's all sorts of thoughts or beliefs or values or opinions that you're not allowed to hold either. And what I want to suggest is tolerance is not the fault of how we've ended up. It is actually a perversion of that concept.
How do we convince people who would impinge on our freedom in general? How do we get the message to them to stop? How do we do that?
Paul, I love your question there, because you're saying, how do we convince them? It's about persuasion. If anyone is to say something of my politics, is that I'm anti-authoritarian. I don't believe we should coerce people into doing things that against their will. And your question is, there's how do we invite people to consider that it's actually for their good? I think the way we do that is by looking at history and looking through who the benefactors of the radical idea that people shouldn't be burnt at the stake or exiled or whatever it is for simply thinking differently. And it always relates to power. For a period of Western history, the church was the nexus of power. And so it was heretics that suffered then. And then we went through a period of time where nationalism came into power, and those who were more democratic suffered there. And at various points, what is abundantly clear is that free speech is the greatest friend to those who are powerless. And so this narrative is just an absurd and a ludicrous claim. This narrative that is somehow free speech enables the far right, straight white Christian males to maintain their power. Nonsense. If people have power, they are the ones who want to shut out the inconvenient people who don't have power but still have their voices. And so the way we convince people is by ensuring that we don't make, I think one thing we do, Paul, is we ensure free speech doesn't become a political football. And I think I probably have two things to say about that. The first is the Free Speech Union works very, very hard not to take any political positions. But the second thing I'd say with that is right now, of course, we recognize that opposition to free speech is coming from one end of the spectrum a lot more than the other. So, yes, probably 8 out of 10 of the fights that we take on are what are more traditional or more conservative or perhaps more right-wing voices, and maybe only 2 out of 10 are progressive or left-wing causes. I don't think that tells you anything about us, though. I think that tells you about the state of play of free speech in the moment. Certainly, you'll remember 20, 30 years ago, free speech was far more a penchant of the left and was more opposed by the right.
Yeah, there's been a flip.
And there has been a flip, exactly. And what free speech advocates need to do is be dedicated to the principle and say, we do not think people should be shut out because of what they think or what they say. And that puts us in really inconvenient places, right? It puts us in really uncomfortable places. And I want to really credit the fact that the Free Speech Union has over 100,000 supporters, and the vast majority of our supporters truly are dedicated to this idea. There is a portion, though, who it's kind of course I believe in free speech for me, but not for thee. And as soon as there's an alternative political perspective that they disagree with, or an issue, for example, like gang patches. You know what? I've heard all the arguments. I accept the reason some gang members wear gang patches is to intimidate.
Yeah.
But you know what? The reason some speak up for women wear you can't be a man, you don't look like a man, even if you squint, shirts is also to provoke a conversation, right? And a transgender person might consider that intimidation. I think a gender-critical woman should be allowed to display her beliefs through her shirt, and I think a gang member should be able to display his beliefs as well. Now, what his beliefs are telling me is that I want to watch out for this guy. I want to make sure my car's locked properly. And that's the thing. A lot of people, I think, don't realize that free speech performs two really important functions in our society. The more noble is that it makes us look for truth in places we otherwise might not find it. And then that's kind of the whole marketplace of ideas, best ideas float to the top. That is the most noble and the first reason free speech is important. But there's a second reason as well. Even if what people are saying isn't a good idea that's going to float to the top, if it's an idiot, at least they're revealing to you that they're an idiot. And if they're a bully, you might want to cross to the other side of the road. So I think that's how we can draw people into this, is by illustrating that it actually is water that makes all boats float higher.
Yeah, being anti-free speech is kind of lazy in the end, isn't it? It doesn't require much thought. It's easy to adhere to because the generic answer is, shut up, you right-wing crazy, you're nasty. And I do find that conservative thinkers are a lot more free-thinking than that kind of breed. I'm wondering what you had to do to put this Association, International Association of Free Speech Unions together, because it encompasses quite a few groups. How long have you been working on that? And, you know, how long has it taken to sort of pull together?
Mm-hmm. I'll just add to that comment you made there. Our would-be censors are lazy. You're absolutely right. And it's fundamentally arrogant as well. Free speech is a humble disposition.
Jonathan, they don't see their arrogance. This is the thing. When you're not thinking very well, you don't even know you're doing that.
Of course not. Absolutely. So in 2020, the Free Speech Union UK was set up, and that was out of Toby Young, and he didn't he set it up right before COVID came around, right at the start of 2020, and so he had put a team together, and they'd been planning on getting an office, and then they were all in lockdown and all working remotely, and they kind of set up from there. Now Toby Young, who came on Reality Check Radio last month when he was here in town with us. It set up another platform called the Daily Skeptic that provided a lot of commentary around skepticism about lockdowns and vaccines and such. And so he is a free thinker looking to promote open conversation on some of these crucial questions. But how he came to that was that he had suffered from a cancel mob himself. I'll let your listeners refer back to his conversation with Simon O'Connor to hear that story. But he had a personal story in this regard, and at that point when he was cancelled, he thought, I wish there was an organization I could turn to that could provide me with a little bit of legal advice, a little bit of comms advice. Do I apologize? Don't I apologize? Will that just make it worse? And so that's where the fusion of the areas that we work in came along. And the Free Speech Coalition in New Zealand had already existed for a couple of years here. And a number of individuals, Dr. David Kuman, Stephen Franks, and some others who are involved with that, they saw the Free Speech Union come along in the UK, and they thought, actually, that's a great name, that's a great idea. And in New Zealand, we are actually a registered trade union. We have the right to go on employees' premises and advocate for their employment rights there. So we were the second cab off the rank, as it were, there. And in the UK, the FSU there has become a national leader. The Free Speech Union here also has, you know, we've got about 10 on staff now. And so we've become a leader in the nation in this space as well. There are two others that came along also. South Africa in 2022 set up a Free Speech Union. And then just last year at the in November 2023, I went over there and we helped launch a Free Speech Union in Australia. So that's how the four came along under that one brand there. And those last two are growing, but not quite as dominant yet. And we also have one coming in Canada before the end of the year. So we were already talking to each other. We share a common brand. We all come out of the FSU UK, but we're independent organizations. So we spoke of ourselves as a sister organization. What you touched on earlier was the fact that, yes, this is a fight across the West. The West is having a bit of an identity crisis at the moment in terms of what its values truly mean. But that's particularly true, I think, in the English-speaking world. And there's a couple of explanations for that. Who knows which is right? But one of the reasons maybe is that so much cancel culture and groupthink and opposition to censorship that has emerged over the past, say, 10 or 15 years has come through social media and through the internet. And Tumblr and other groups like that, and because the primary language of the internet and social media is English, that's kind of been case zero in many ways. And so, actually, Paul, it didn't take that long to pull together. We Toby Young was coming out here. We started planning that about 6 months ago, and we said, well, hang on, why don't we formalize our cooperation a little bit more? Let's put something on the global stage a bit. And crucially, let's create something that others might want to join into and make this momentum grow. And hopefully we can, we're planning on stepping into some non-English speaking countries as well. Switzerland and Brazil are both considering it also. So we will provide an umbrella organization, some best practice, some legal models and such that they can attach themselves to.
Is it fair to say, Jonathan, we're really in a dogfight here, actually? It's an epic arm wrestle because we can't have them winning in the end. I'm sorry, it just can't happen. Even if their ideas are embraced by many, you know, using the free speech that they have to do that, because, well, it just feels wrong, man, you know?
Paul, what is abundantly clear to me is that the alternative to free speech is violence. And that seems like a dramatic statement to make. But I would challenge anyone to disprove me on that. If we promote this idea in society that individuals get to shut down other people's voices, shut down other people's opinions, control information that they access, you called them lazy before, and that is absolutely right. And one of the laziest aspects of that is that somehow that makes the problem go away. If there is a, and this is their word, not mine, but if there is a hateful person out there, well, we just stop them from using hate speech and job done. Whatever. It actually just pushes them underground and it makes them feel more estranged from society. And some of your listeners may know, I grew up in Mozambique in the 90s and in the 2000s. And what occurred there was it was the connection point really between the First World and the Second World. I was born in 1995, so after the Cold War kind of ended, but I feel like I have a connection to what that wrestle between liberal, democratic, freedom-driven values. And I'm not trying to tick anyone's catchphrase bingo card here, but what neo-Marxist ideology really offers. And so you say we're in a dogfight here. You're absolutely right. And in many ways, I would suggest the Cold War never ended. We thought we had beaten these horrific ideas, and in parts of the world they had been. But at the very point that the First World, America and its liberal democratic allies were celebrating, Bill Clinton and Ronald Reagan and the lot were celebrating the triumph of the liberal world order. That was exactly when postmodernism was starting to hit its stride, and critical theories were starting to embed themselves in universities across the United States, and neo-Marxist thought was coming to a fore. And what my generation has experienced, those born in the 90s after the Cold War, we were never inoculated against these ideas. I am pro-vaccine to the extent of being exposed to bad ideas to learn why they're wrong, and I think we didn't have to make the arguments for free speech. We didn't have to make the arguments for why basic liberal givens are actually still crucial to our society. And that put us on the back foot. We got lazy, to be honest, I think, as a society on a number of these questions. We are in a dogfight, but I would say, Paul, there's a lot of reason to think that those that are committed to freedom and liberty are winning, and they will win. It's a cold war. It's going on again. I think we see that in a geopolitical reality. We see it in our cultural reality, but there is every reason to think those that are dedicated to freedom still have the best ideas and will still come through if they are strategic and willing to sacrifice for the cause.
Jonathan, I hope you're right. You're selling me. It's good.
I'm still in my 20s. I'm too young to give up hope, Paul. Otherwise, we might as well just clock out, and I'm not sure. So, look, no, I realize we're facing some pretty significant headwinds, but I think we can only choose but believe that that tomorrow can be different.
No, I think fundamentally you're right. And I'm just thinking, you were explaining your experience at your age, and my experience, I'm quite a bit older than you, is that we... And I don't know if you call it propaganda, but, you know, we saw images of nothing in the supermarket, in Russian supermarkets. We knew about the gulags. We knew about Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And we knew about those things. We didn't know that Russia actually won the war because without their grunt, it wouldn't have happened. But we were aware of how lucky we had it compared to, and I think that at some point that dissolved away, that awareness dissolved away maybe. What do I know? But anyway, great to catch up with you again. And it'll be interesting to see, because this is a force multiplying effect, isn't it, when you've got multiple organizations joining together across the globe, and you'll be looking to leverage that, won't you? And really projecting a bit of power, if you can, in this area.
Yes, I think so. And of course, there's those strategic aspects of it. But I think even just in terms of the tactical side, just being able to share best practice. Look, I'll be honest, Paul, when I was the first hire at the FSU, and I had a great counsel that said, go forth and save New Zealand's free speech. And I would sit here at my desk and go, okay, what's next? How do you know? And probably we've built the plane while flying it in many ways, and we've got a bit of a more sophisticated model now, and hopefully we don't have to see others reinvent that wheel. We can share that with them, and our collective boat will go faster as a result.
Jonathan Ayling, always good to have you. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks, Paul.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.